Right, welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. It's a Yacht Rock Thursday edition of Ball Don't Lie. I haven't thrown it out there. It's been a jam-packed show. We're off early, a truncated edition, abbreviated edition of Ball Don't Lie, off at 6:15, giving you up to Texas baseball. Actually, we're here at UFCU Disfalk Field, courtesy of the IMG Radio Network, the fine folks there, and the prodigious clout of one Craig Way. Speaking of Craig Way, he's going to be on the call with Hardball Harge. 6:15 is the pregame, first pitch at 6:30. Looking forward to that, my man, Hardball Harge. Second time working with Craig Way. Doing a great job. And you got a lot of compliments, too. First
Appreciate
time to work with.
Appreciate
good
it.
Job. All right, let's get right to it. Let's not waste any time because we don't want to run short on this time, and this is the hottest topic of the day. Yes, if you have not heard by now, there is major beef, all right, beef going on between Alabama's head coach Nick Saban and the Texas A&M head coach Jimbo Fisher. It started with this. This is Nick Saban. He was at a bit of a kind of a town hall meeting talking to some Alabama fans, and he decided to call out one Jimbo Fisher and the Aggies. Here it is.
The thing that I fear is at some point in time, they're just going to say we're going to have to pay players. If we start paying players, we're going to have to eliminate sports. All right? And this is all bad for college sports. I mean, we probably have, 450 people on scholarship at Alabama, whether they're women's tennis players, women's softball players, golfers, you know, baseball players, non-revenue sports that have for years and years and years been able to create a better life for themselves because they've been able to get scholarships and participate in college athletics. That's what college athletics is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be something where people come and make money. And you make a decision about where you go to school based on how much money you're going to make. You should make a decision based on where you have the best chance to develop as a person, as a student, and as a player, which is what we've always tried to major in, and we're going to continue to do that, and hopefully there's enough people out there that want to do it. But I know the consequence is going to be difficult for the people who are spending tons of money to get players. And you've read about them. You know who they are. I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player, all right, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it.
He did say, though, it was kind of strange, you don't go to college to based on how much money you can make. It's like, actually, I think that's why everybody goes to college.
Yes, that's why they make more money.
It's like, you know, he was like grasping at straws. Because at one point, we won't play it because we don't have enough time and I want to get into it here. But he does call out Jackson State and Deion Sanders' program.
Prime time.
Calls out Miami as well. Deion Sanders said he was going to respond, has not responded yet. Harge and I think that basically because Jimbo Fisher lit the world on fire and went scorched earth, it's like the album, it's like when Kendrick Lamar's album came out. I'm sure some other jabroni rapper was like, hey man, we got to push ours back. That Kendrick Lamar album is fire, man. Nobody's going to care about what we put out if that's out there already. So I think Deion wants the platform, and right now everybody's talking about what Jimbo Fisher said, which we will play as well. But just quick comments about what Saban said and what he's getting into. Essentially, he's anti-collective. He doesn't like the collectives. And by the way, he did go on Sirius XM earlier today. I think it was just a couple hours ago, and did apologize. We will play the Jimbo official comments for you, but he did apologize. He said, quote, I should have never singled anybody out. He said, and I apologize for that part of it, which means he's not apologizing for what he said. It's almost like, Harge, when you're talking to your wife or something, or you're apologizing to someone, you say, yeah, I apologize for hurting your feelings. I don't apologize for what I said.
Right.
Or for,
I meant what I said. That's right.
But I'm sorry it hurt your damn feelings. I think that's kind of what he's getting to. He says it's the whole system, and is this a sustainable system, and is it good for football? So he went on to say that he reached out to Jimbo Fisher and Deion Sanders, never got a response. He said, I feel bad about it. And he reiterated his philosophy about trying to help the players. So I think Nick Saban, you know, you look at it, is he a rat or snitch or a whistleblower? I think most people consider him kind of a rat. rat. And a rat is someone who was a member of the organization and also a participant in the corrupt, unlawful, illegal behavior, but then wants to blow the whistle and cooperate with authorities just to save their own skin. Or when it's not working out for them, that's people consider him to be more of a rat than a whistleblower, which is somebody who, yes, they saw the wrongdoing. Yes, they were a member of the organization, but they decided to blow the whistle and to go do the right thing instead of participating in it themselves. Most people believe that Nick Saban was the king of cheating at one point.
Right.
And just was doing it better than everybody else. Now, there's perception that is not reality, but that's what everybody believes about Nick Saban in Alabama.
And that's why when you get a chance to listen to how Jimbo responded, there's some angst there. There's an axe that's like, hold on, man, you're talking about me now. And I worked for you. So you obviously saw something in me. Now you're not only attacking me, you're attacking my university, you're attacking the people that have worked hard to get it to achieve these types of situations.
7 5-stars.
Number one recruiting class
in the country. Number one recruiting class ever.
Ever.
Of all time.
Yes.
Of all time.
I've worked really hard to get to this point, and now you're going to try to do that? No, man, I'm not answering it. I'm not answering no phone call. I'm not talking to nobody.
He ain't talking to him. He did not answer that phone call, which, they're good. I don't know if they're good friends, but they definitely are friends.
That don't sound like a good friend. That's like what you said a minute ago. What'd you say a minute ago? Hey, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
But and I ain't sorry about what I said.
And I will say this too, Harge. Maybe Jimbo Fisher, there are some relationships you have that you don't look forward to engaging.
Right.
Either they belittle you and demean you. They make you feel bad when you're
around
them.
You're always the joke because they want to joke on you.
What? They always bring up a story that humiliates you or whatever.
I'll never tell you about what he did.
Exactly, right? And you go and you're like, man, I really. And then they do something that is a slight to you or they disrespect you. And you almost use that as a reason to cut them off because you really don't want to be hanging out with them anyway. Yep. Something tells me Jimbo Fisher might have some of that with Nick Saban. Like, man, I was looking for a reason to cut you off, man. And now I got it.
Now I
got the reason. All right, here, let's listen to Jimbo's response. We talked about this, Nick Saban. I think Nick Saban, listen, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yep.
Nick Saban's mad at Jimbo Fisher when he should be mad at the system. Don't be mad at him now if they're weaponizing name, image, and likeness. And he named names, Nick. You name names. You
violated. Nino Brown.
Right?
That is Nino Brown.
That's exactly what you did. You went up there and named names.
Yep.
That's the violation of the G-Code, man. Everybody knows that. You don't do that. And I think that's why he went out there and apologized. And was like, I'm wrong. I shouldn't have done it. All right, let's hear from the response, though, the retort from Jimbo Fisher, because it's ham. Hard as a mofo, man. He goes. And here is Jimbo Fisher. It's about 2 minutes, but it's worth it. He goes scorched earth, and here is his response to one Nick Saban.
First of all, I'll say it's a shame that we have to do this. It's really despicable. It's despicable that somebody can say things about somebody and an organ. More importantly, 17-year-old kids. You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families. They broke state laws. They're all money. We bought every player on this group. We never bought anybody. No rules were broken. Nothing was done wrong. It was all in the way we do things, the ethics in which we do things. And these families, it's despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this when he doesn't get his way or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen. And it's ridiculous, but when he's not on top. And the parity in college football he's been talking about, go talk to coaches who coach for him. You'll find out all the parity. Go dig into wherever he's been. You can find out anything. And it's a shame that you got to sit here and defend 17-year-old kids and families and Texas A&M because we do things right. We're always going to do things right. But we're always going to be here. We're doing a heck of a job. These coaches have done a great job. Our players have done a great job. The whole organization of recruiting people. It's despicable that we got to sit here at this level of ball and say these things to defend the people of this organization, the kids, 17-year-old kids, and their families. It's amazing. Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out about a guy that a lot of things you don't want to know. We built him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past or anybody that's ever coached with him. You can find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it. And it's despicable. It really is. And it's a shame we have to sit up here and have this conversation about things we do. And it's personal to us. Yes, it is. It's personal to A&M. It's personal to our players. It's personal to our coaches and everybody involved. And I know the guy, know him really well. It's amazing that we're allowed to do those things. It's really despicable. And I hate it. For our players who are coming here, who did things the right way, have done things the right way, and will continue to do things the right way, I apologize to you that people insult you publicly the way they're doing it. And our fans, I apologize to you guys for people saying those things about Texas A&M. But promise you this, there are no violations. There are nothing wrong. It's the second time we've had to do this with grown men who don't get their way and want to pout, throw a fit, and act up. Just go ask all the people who work for him. You'll know exactly what he's about. I always said this. My dad always told me this. When people show you who they are, believe them. He's showing you who he is.
I don't know if this was done intentionally by, you know, the ad, because now Ross Bjork has joined the party.
He couldn't wait. He was like, come on, Jimbo.
Yeah, you're right. He couldn't
come
wait.
Come on,
like,
Jimbo.
Jimbo, I got your back, brother. We're going to take this all the way to the administration. Yeah, so if you don't know about Ross Bjork, the AD for A&M, he says, I don't know why Nick Saban would say what he said, and he claims that Nick Saban's comments violate the SEC sportsmanship bylaw. Yeah, I'm talking about the Real Housewives of the SEC now, and that he's been in contact with Greg Sankey about the violation of the SEC sportsmanship. I didn't know they had sportsmanship bylaws in the SEC. It's the
Learn
SEC.
Something new every day. I'm glad we know now because that's where we're headed.
Right,
that's
true.
Headed.
You got to know that kind of stuff. Oh, you know what definitely violates the sportsmanship bylaws of the SEC? Throwing the horns down. It definitely does. Definitely violates. And they're going to be throwing the horns down a ton. I wonder if they'll bring it up. Anyway, I digress. I'll say this, though. I don't know if they've done it intentionally or not. I think it's unintentional, so I'm not going to give the Aggies credit for a grand master plan. But can you think right now, off the top of your head, a more anticipated college football matchup than the Alabama Crimson Tide versus Texas A&M right now? They play on the same day as Texas plays Oklahoma. And I know we've talked about this. The Aggies don't really have a rival, and they don't. They're rivalless, and I think that's part of why they don't want to be the side piece rivalry for Texas when Texas plays Oklahoma, and maybe that's why they don't want to be in the same pod potentially as Texas, so they don't have to worry about being in the shadow of Texas. But if you can't find a rival, find beef. Right?
Create
you can't,
one.
Create it.
Yeah.
If you can't find a rival, if nobody wants to be your rival and everybody's mocking you a little bit because of that, man, go pick out a fight. Go pick
what
a
they
fight.
Say, get the biggest dog in the yard. Go
and
find
actually,
the biggest
you,
dude in there.
If you go and look at rap beefs, often they would do this. If you were a rapper that was considered less respected and you were lower down the totem pole, you would pick a rap beef with a big-time rapper.
That's what and that rapper did for LL Cool J when he went after LL.
Yeah, right? And that rapper would start mentioning you in his raps. And people would go, who's that guy? Okay, well, let's talk about him. 50 Cent kind of did it with Ja Rule. I don't know if people think it's crazy, but he really did. He knew he could take Ja Rule out, and he went with Wangsta, and they got personal. Remember,
goodness.
He claimed that Ja Rule tried to stab him and all this kind of stuff, and then that went with the Murder, Inc. and all that kind of stuff. It got deep, but at the beginning, it was just Wangsta. He just called out Ja Rule for being kind of a punk.
Yeah,
you know
basically.
What I mean? Basically, he just kind of called him out. Like, no, I'm calling you out, man. You think you're a gangster of love. You know, man, you're a Wangsta. And it was kind of the old, you know, blueprint of pick out a rapper that's big time, pick a fight with him, pick a beef with him, and then it'll uplift your status. And in a sense, I don't know if the Aggies are doing it intentionally, but it is lifting their status. Like I said, they don't have a rivalry with really anybody, right? They're going to want to get it back with Texas, but they don't want to be Texas' side piece rivalry because Texas and Oklahoma are the main thing. But now they got something that it's not as good as a rivalry because a rivalry is long term. But if you can't – listen, if you can't be with the one you love, then love the one you're with, right? If you can't find Mr. Right, find Mr. Right Now or Mrs. Right Now, whatever it is, that's what the Aggies are doing. They can't find Miss Right or Mr. Right, so they found Mr. Right Now, and it's Alabama. And right now, Alabama fans, probably more than they want to face the Auburn, the Auburn rivalry right now, they probably are thinking about this beef.
Yeah.
The beef right now, just in the present tense, right now, in this moment, it has actually eclipsed the rivalries. Because now everybody wants to see this beef. It's going to be hard to top the anticipation for this matchup. I'm not saying the Aggies are going to play with Alabama Crimson Tide. They beat them last year. But it's amazing how now just them going ham, not saying they did it as a master plan, but Harge, now the Aggies have put themselves in a position where now everybody wants to watch them play Bama. Isn't that the whole point of a rivalry? That the world wants to watch us duke it out?
Yeah, maybe that's what happened. He saw an opportunity to get that party really started when Nick Saban said their
name. He said what he said.
And he was like, you know what? I'm about to go at him.
Let's go.
Let's go Jay-Z and Nas.
Jay-Z
and Nas.
Let's go.
Right now, I'm about to bring ether to him. And so he came at him and let him know, hey, I'm not even answering his phone calls. He tried to call me.
Nothing.
He tried to call me. I'm not finna do that. Okay. All right.
And now everybody's
now
talking about
game.
It.
Yeah.
And Nick Saban, I think Nick Saban understands like now, oh man, actually, this got way bigger than I wanted it to get. I didn't want it to get this big. Now Nick Saban's apologizing. Because I think he's just trying to subdue it a little bit. He realizes that for Jimbo Fisher, this is a good thing. Some people are saying Jimbo Fisher looks like an idiot. Jimbo Fisher looks like an idiot. He speaks like an idiot. He don't know what the hell he's talking about, man. The Aggies look stupid. Okay. If you think that, and that's fine, by the way. I'm not saying that you're wrong about that. That's a valid opinion. You believe that. But Jimbo Fisher wasn't talking to you.
Yeah.
It's the same thing I tell people when they say, man, Trump's an idiot. President Trump, you see what I'm talking up there. You know what the hell he's talking about. He's making up stuff. He's freestyling. I'm like, he's not talking to you then.
Yep.
Because there are a lot of people out there that are getting riled up, and they love it.
They love him.
They love him, and they love what he's got to say. Same thing about Jimbo Fisher.
That's the Aggies.
You're mad at him. You're like, oh, he sounds like an idiot. Who would listen to that guy?
Yeah.
The donations are pouring in. the Aggies are getting a cash
that's
machines
that
right
machine.
Now. the phones are ringing up like a telethon right now. Because he was riling up his base. He's talking to his base. He ain't talking to you. Longhorn is like, man, he sounds so stupid up there. He ain't talking to you.
Yeah,
he's talking to his base, and right now everybody else is talking about them. That's the whole point of this.
Yep.
Like I said, I don't know if they did it intentionally, but it's working.
Yeah,
it's working.
Definitely is.
Y'all can't say it ain't working.
It's definitely working for sure.
So I think that's why. To me, it did come off as a rap, a diss track, though, right? Almost in a rap beef where you can tell that Jimbo Fisher does believe that Nick Saban violated a trust, and it reminds me it was his version of Hit 'Em Up.
Yep.
And when Tupac went scorched earth, when he crossed the Rubicon, because he did, all right? That's why F Joe, you fat mo.
Yeah.
And that was the first lyric of the song.
Yeah.
And everybody went, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
This is personal.
Yeah.
Personal on a whole nother level. The vitriol and hatred is palpable.
That's real.
He, at the end of it, he was talking about people wish they died. Like,
right, right.
Really, this, it went deeper than the diss tracks, just using little puns and trying to lyrically annihilate somebody. No, no, no. He was just saying, no, I wish you'd catch sickle cell and die.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It went to a whole nother level, and it just got really personal. And the point, I think, just my comparison to Jimbo is you can tell it's personal for Jimbo. It was personal. He went scorched earth. He, just like Tupac in that song, there was things that were said that you can never take back.
Yeah,
we're done.
Yeah.
Can't take that back. You go into a narcissist and God complex and nope, can't take it back. That's why F Joe, you fat, okay, can't take that back. We can't walk that back. Yes, we were some friends.
It's a little harsh.
Yeah, there's no olive branch there. We can't walk that back. And I think if Jimbo Fisher crossed the Rubicon, like you can't go back. And maybe Nick Saban will try to call him again, but I don't think Jimbo's going to take that call. I think for Jimbo, it is personal. I think you violated a trust, and Jimbo's like, hold on, you called me? Don't you know I know we did dirt together? What?
That's
you just
the
called me
thing.
Out, and we used to do the dirt together? Yeah. Essentially, what he's saying up there is that, dude, we used to do it together, me and you. We did the dirt. You told me about the dirt. You did. I told you about the dirt. I did. You would promote me because I did the dirt for you. What are you talking about,
man? I know where the bodies are. And that's why I think Nick Saban came out and apologized. The main reason why is when Jimbo said, go talk to all his former assistant coaches.
Come on now.
He was like, I might need to make a big apology. He's not going to take my phone call, so I got to go national with it. I got to jump on the radio. Just like I did then, I got to make sure that this gets out so everybody can understand that I went too far. Because now he's asking people to start snitching on me.
Like you did.
Like you did.
You just name names.
And now everybody's in there.
Now everybody's like, oh, you naming names. Oh. Are we naming names now?
Are
we naming names now?
Yeah.
I thought we were just hinting and stuff, insinuating.
The unwritten rules of this game.
The gentleman's agreement. Yeah. But now we're naming names. So that's a different story.
Go talk to all his other coaches. I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Well, because he's had a lot of coaches, and they don't all like him.
Right.
I mean, It's like anybody, right? If you're a boss, not all your employees like you.
Exactly.
You ain't that good of a boss.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. All bosses listening right now, not all your employees like you. And you know what? That means you're probably a good boss.
That's what I was just saying.
If all your employees like you, you're probably a terrible boss.
Yeah.
So I feel
I'm here
on
for
that.
All the employees.
Exactly.
No, you're not.
There's always a disgruntled few apples in the batch there. And you know what? Maybe they're willing to sing and maybe they're willing to talk. It's an interesting conversation. We could talk about this damn thing all day. As a matter of fact, we might keep talking about it. Next segment, though, I want to get into what Sark said down in H-Town. The Houston Touchdown Club had a lot to say. We're going to have some sound from Sark as well, and we'll talk about some of his comments. All of that and more right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 The Horn.
Bucky is mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
No, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to Rod's Rant of the Day right here on Ball Don't Lie. I want to get into some of the quotes and some of the sound audio that we have from Steve Sarkisian down at the Touchdown Club down in Houston. So we'll just get right to it. We'll get to my favorite quote, the one I'm most excited about. We'll get there, save that toward the end. But two pieces of audio here. One is Coach Sarkisian talking about Texas-Oklahoma. A lot of Longhorn fans, of course, still scarred from that Texas-Oklahoma game, being up 21 points in that game and then having the worst meltdown in the history of Texas football, giving up a 21-point lead, largest lead given up in a Texas loss in the program's history. Here's Sark explaining that a little bit and talking about why he's so excited about getting back to that Texas OU game.
The USC Notre Dame rivalry, the Apple Cup in Washington with Washington and Washington State, the Iron Bowl in Alabama with Alabama Auburn. Everyone told me this was going to be the best rivalry I've ever been part of. It was the best, excluding of maybe driving into a national championship game, as BY will tell you. You come down in the Rose Bowl, and it's, you know, you're playing for all the marbles. That one's tough to beat that way. But driving in to the Cotton Bowl, the State Fair, the fans, coming out into that stadium, the split colors, that was a phenomenal setting for college football. One, I'm getting goosebumps right now. I mean, my skin is crawling right now. I can't wait to get back to that game. And I said it after that game, and I mean it. I wish we would have got another crack at it last year. We screwed it up. But we played really good football for three quarters, and we screwed it up completely. But I think our team was ready to play. We showed up ready to play. Ultimately, the goal is to go win the game. You want to win the game. And I'm tired of them putting on the freaking hat, man. I want to wear the hat. So, yeah, we'll be ready to go this year.
All right, that's Sark talking about. Yeah, I know. I'm happy that he's tired of him wearing the freaking hat. I'm tired of him wearing the freaking hat too, Sark. I think we all agree with you there. Here's the next piece of audio, and this kind of relates to something that Nick Saban was talking about. Obviously, when he called out Jimbo Fisher and called out A&M, called out Miami and Deion Sanders and Jackson State. He's talking about name, image, and likeness, specifically the Lamborghini. The Lamborghini guy, which is Bijan Robinson, because he has a Lamborghini endorsement. Here is Sark talking about that is essentially, that encapsulates, Bijan does, everything name image likeness should be about.
I use this guy as a great example. Bijan Robinson signs an NIL deal with Lamborghini. We all know he's a great football player, all-conference player, award winner, record-breaking runner. I think he's got another great year. He's a great year. Poised for another great season. But every guy on our team knows Bijan Robinson is a better human being than he is a football player. How he represents the university, how he represents himself, the student that he is, the person that he is in the community, that ultimately is the result of that is why he's got this NIL deal with Lamborghini. Every player on our team, I'm sure, would love to drive a Lamborghini. Don't get me wrong. But that guy kind of earned it, right? He earned it. One, through his play, two, through the person that he is, and that's the true essence of name, image, and likeness.
He's actually right. I mean, that's what Nick Saban was saying. Nick Saban was saying it shouldn't be about recruiting a guy. Name, image, likeness shouldn't help you recruit a player to the school. It should help you be able to maximize the value of the student athletes that are already on campus. That is the spirit of the rule. But nobody gives a damn about the spirit of the rule.
I was going to say, what kind of spirits we dealing with?
Exactly.
Ghost riders over here.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What I'm
saying? Nobody cares about the spirit of the rule because it's the NCAA and they have no soul. So
right.
Can't talk about spirit when the NCAA, they have no soul. But one of the things I thought was really interesting from Sark that he brought up, he said, Roshan Johnson is the leader of our football team, and I make no bones about that. So he's now saying that Rojo is the unquestioned leader of the team. I think we could all – I mean, he willed you to a win in the K-State game. As a matter of fact, you don't win that K-State game without Rojo.
Exactly.
In the Wildcat.
Exactly.
Without Rojo in the Wildcat, you are basically in the season on a 7-game losing streak. And he will.
Oh, my God.
No, they do.
No, I know, but I mean, just
remember,
the
no
fact
BJ.
That you're saying it, the way that you're saying it,
I mean, bro, think
it
about
sounds
it.
Awful.
You have no you have no Bijan Robinson.
No.
Both of your quarterbacks are injured in that game.
No.
X-Man was injured in that game, too. I mean, he played, but he was still hobbling around. If not for Rojo, you don't win that game at all, and that's just how impactful Rojo has been for you.
Uh-huh.
And he's been a great leader, man. This is a guy that – man, he's a rare breed. First of all, he started off at quarterback, I should say. They moved him to running back. Most quarterbacks in this day and age.
Via injury.
Right.
Because there was injuries in the running back room, and they were so short.
And most quarterbacks these days.
Not even thinking about that.
They transfer.
I'm going to another school.
I'm out, man. Sorry.
Especially because he was a recruit that was early commitment, that stayed with the commitment.
Stayed with it.
And he was a guy that everybody was looking at and being, he can be a difference maker. You know, not necessarily the Wildcat, but being able to run around, throw the ball on the run, extend games. I mean, he was just that. He was supposed to be that all-around guy. But then the injuries in the room, he goes, I'll go in there and do it.
Oh, he's got, and they end up like competing for the starting spot.
Yes,
like with Keontae Ingram.
Yes,
and now of course he is in ensconced, all right, in that running back room and entrenched as the second team running back. But obviously, I think he is the leader of the team. Just give you some Wildcat numbers. Just Rojo in the Wildcat this year, 8.7 yards per rush out of the Wildcat.
That's a sick number.
If you eliminate the 72-yarder that they had in the – I believe it was in the Rice game, I believe it was in, still averaged over 5.2 yards per rush in the Wildcat. And Wildcat, I'm telling you, they will be using more of the Wildcat this year, and it's a smart move by Sark to use more of the Wildcat formation. All right, something else that got me excited. Apparently, Sark and the coaching staff and Isaiah Hall, they were trolling – the fans and trolling Alabama fans when they asked about why he scrubbed his like social media account, and then they got obviously social media talking about him, you know, upset with the Longhorns. He said, Sark said, quote, "We might have had a hand in that." He said Hall has already signed his scholarship paperwork. So they were just trolling everybody.
So bad.
That's awesome.
That's so bad.
Good for you, Sark. Good for you. Made me like Sark even – maybe like him even
Sark,
more, man.
Sark trying to win you over, bro.
Man, he is winning. Hiring Brendan Marion, he won me over.
Yeah.
When he hired Brendan Marion, a guy I've been screaming for them to hire for 3 years, Sark won me over. So I'm a Sark guy now. I'm in. I'm all in. That's the one thing he had to do to show me that he knew where the program needed to go. So I like that move. My man, Jeff Howe did a great job. He has a write-up about Sark being asked about the quarterback position, specifically Arch Manning and Arch Manning's recruitment. And he can't mention Arch by name. We know that. But here's what Sark said about that recruitment. Remember, Sark's only recruiting one quarterback in the 2023 class, and that one quarterback is Arch Manning. Arch Manning did recently say that he thinks Georgia is
a great college town.
Yeah,
I saw that.
Sark said, "If I didn't feel good about a situation, I would go in another direction." He went on to say, "I feel pretty good about our track record. I could probably get a quarterback committed today, but ideally, I'd like to recruit the best guys, and that's how you build your roster. We're going to kind of stay the course." And I think this is to show Arch Manning that you're all we want.
Yep.
We don't want anybody. We're all in on you. Coach Sark's Manning said Coach Sark's first year with a whole new roster and no one he recruited. It's definitely hard to go in and be successful. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do this year. That's kind of my deciding factor there in building a relationship with them. With a year under his belt, let's see what he can do now. So that means this year going to be big for Sark, especially
for
the quarterback
position.
Let's go. Speaking of quarterbacks, though, Sark said he will recruit a quarterback every year. One quarterback a year. He said, "We kind of take one quarterback a year, but again, every year different circumstances arise, injuries, transfers, things pop up." That is smart. I'll give you this number before we go to break here. Since 2005, Texas has recruited and signed 24 quarterbacks now. Four of them are still on campus. That's Quinn Ewers, Charles Wright, Malik Murphy, and Hudson Card. At least you with 20. Out of those 20 quarterbacks, 11 of them transferred, two injured and ended their careers. Three of them changed positions. You only had four quarterbacks out of the last 24 quarterbacks that you signed that finished their eligibility playing the quarterback position. Both McCoys, Tyrone Swoops, and Bam Bam Sam. That's it. That's it.
Wow.
So, yeah, recruit one every year. Yeah. Good idea, Sark. All right, I'll tell you about my favorite Sark quote. We'll tell you about that later on the show. I promise we'll get to that. Or I'll save it for Rod's rant of the day. It depends on what goes down. But we'll come back next. Oh, are you going to stick around? Or are you out of here?
I think you're out of here. I'm going to leave right after
this. Yeah, all right. Yeah. So my man Hart's going because Hart's got to go call the game with Craig Way. 6:15 pregame, 6:30 first pitch. So say bye to – oh, you're not coming back tomorrow either.
No, I'm out. I'm gone.
You got to say bye to the people, man, for the rest of the week.
Yeah, it's been a fun week. It's great that we got a chance to a chance to be a part of what was going on today.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so glad that
they decided to go scorched earth today. Yes. Last night and today. So it was perfect timing.
Thank you, Jimbo Fisher.
Wow. Because it was perfect timing.
What a world.
I love it.
Thank you, Jimbo Fisher. Crazy.
Yes, I'm going to enjoy the weekend. Got a bunch of games to call this weekend, and I'll be back Monday, wrap it all up, tell you all about it, and enjoy the time because baseball's here. They're chasing pennants. Everybody's trying to get that qualification to be in the NCAA tournaments, and Texas is trying to finish off this streak, and maybe Ivan Melendez gets a couple more home runs this weekend.
Man, he's worth the price of admission. No doubt about that. No doubt. All right, we'll come back. Austin FC. A huge win, maybe the biggest win in the history of the organization. It's a good thing. We'll come back. We'll talk about that. All that and more right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 The Horn. Welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. We got two more segments left in the show, and then we give you up to Texas baseball. 6:15, Craig Way and Hardball Harge on the call for the pregame. First pitch is going to be at 6:30. We're out here at UFCU Dish Falk Field, courtesy of the fine folks over at IMG. Also, courtesy of my man Craig Way, this prodigious clout hooking it up. So, beautiful day here at the ballpark, Texas versus Kansas. Hopefully, the Longhorns can get a little bit of help, and hopefully they can be the best version of themselves, break out the brooms versus the Jayhawks. All right, so you hear the call at 6:15 and like I said, 6:30 first pitch. Let's talk about a big game, a big match for Austin FC. They had a midweek match, came out of nowhere basically. It had been the first midweek match they played in a while, and Austin FC collected, how about this, now they've collected 10 points on the road after their victory over LAFC, a 2-1 victory over LAFC, who was first in the Western Conference. Now there's a tie for top of the Western Conference, LAFC and Austin FC. And, of course, Austin FC now with the head-to-head win. Got to give a lot of love to Brad Stuver. Remember a couple of matches ago, a couple of weeks ago, had to deal with a laceration on his leg, with an ugly injury. He was superhuman. Great effort. Gave up one goal in the 86th minute, but had six saves in the match. How about this? First time they've beaten LAFC as an organization. LAFC, that was the first win for Austin FC in the Pacific time zone. First ever win in the Pacific time zone. Now, obviously, Austin FC only been around for two seasons, but you know, they haven't fared well on the road. This season, they're better on the road. 3-2 and 1 on the road. This year, they were, as an organization, 5-15-3. On the road as a franchise for the last 2 years, so they haven't fared well on the road. Particularly, this is the biggest road win, arguably in the history of the organization. Austin now atop of the West. They have, how about this? They collected 10 points on the road this year already. That is two more than they had all of last season. All last season, they only got 8 points total on the road the entire season. Now they're already at 10. Like I said, the first time they've beaten LAFC, but also the first win in the Pacific time zone. So you're talking about a major growth for Austin FC. Owen Wolf, who is Josh Wolf's son, I believe, made his first career start 17 years old. 10th under 18 MLS player to start this season. That's good. Sebastian Driussi, he's still tied. He's actually tied for second in goals now. But he did have a really nice assist in the second goal to Diego Fagundes, who had the goal in the 80th minute, ended up being the winner for Austin FC. Ruben Gabrielson scored the first goal. It was in the 13th minute. This was no Danny Pereira in this match, too, for Austin FC. Remember, he left the game they had against Real Salt Lake, that loss. He actually left that game with a red card, so they were down one man short in the second half. Big part of why they ended up losing that game. But they did snap their losing streak. They had lost back-to-back games to LA Galaxy and then to Real Salt Lake. A lot of people thought they were going to lose this match and had them actually losing three straight. Not the case. Huge win for Austin FC. Diego Fagundes, speaking of, he leads MLS in 7 assists. Austin FC still leads the entire league in goals with 25. Also, Austin FC leads the entire league with 31 assists. Also, they lead the entire league in goals inside the 18. So, Austin FC still playing some high-quality soccer. That was a hell of a win. There wasn't a lot of prognosticators, not a lot of the analysts had Austin FC winning that match against LAFC on the road. Considering how well LAFC was playing, no Danny Pereira. So, this is a team that's learning how to battle against adversity, learning how to win. Josh Wolf talked about them winning those one-score games, or the games that are decided by one score. Those are tough games to win. They're all about character. This is a team that's developing a ton of character in a lot of different places. So Austin FC with a big win. Like I said, maybe biggest win of the franchise's history, the short history of the franchise. So congrats to Austin FC. We'll come back. One more segment. Get ready to wrap it up. Put it in the oven. We'll review the biggest story of the day. Yes, Jimbo Fisher's beef with Nick Saban. We'll talk about that. We'll wrap this thing up and put it in the oven. All that and more right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 The Horn. Welcome back to Ball Don't Lie. Last segment of the show here on Ball Don't Lie. Getting ready for Texas baseball. My man Craig Way, the voice of the Longhorns, and Hardball Harge, my co-host right here on Ball Don't Lie, will be on the call. That'll be 6:15, so in about 10 minutes from now, you have the pregame, and then we'll have the first pitch at 6:30, Texas versus Kansas. Need a little bit of – need some help. I love this tweet by Occupy Left Field. Those out there, me hearing Craig Way on the horn say the Texas baseball has little chance to host a regional, and as a gift with a man who jumps out the window. Craig said he didn't say no chance, he said little chance. So little. Craig did respond, say I said little. I did not say no chance. So Craig Way, keeping hope alive. Keep hope alive. All right. Also, we talked about Mavs, the Mavs in their very disappointing loss to the Golden State Warriors in the first game of the Western Conference Finals. And the truth is, it was one of the worst games we've seen from Luka. They did a really good job of neutralizing Luka, took Luka out of his game. Luka had the lowest scoring game he's had of these playoffs, third lowest of his career, and it was really about the pace. Remember, the Mavs play at a really slow pace, a snail's pace. I mean, it's chopped up and screwed. I mean, they really do like to slow things down and let, Luka just manipulate the defense, let him control the tempo. But they had to play at the Golden State Warriors tempo, and that makes Luka look and feel frantic. He had 7 turnovers, which was the combined number of turnovers for him in the last 3 games, in the previous 3 games, I should say. So that's a big thing, them controlling the tempo. They play completely different styles and contrasting styles in terms of the tempo. The Golden State Warriors want to get up the floor and they want to push the tempo, and the Mavs want to slow things down a little bit. Here's a quote from Jason Kidd. I think it's really, really kind of an enlightening quote. He points out that he says, quote, "We would like to play our pace, but the Warriors have a unique pace. They're going to get out and put a lot of pressure on your defense in transition. We have to be cautious of that. We don't want to track meet." And last night, It was a track meet. And the troubling thing is, I don't think the Golden State Warriors played a great game by any stretch of the imagination. But they ended up still winning 112-87. But Steph started slow. So did Jordan Poole started slow. So did Klay. Those guys started off pretty slow. Andrew Wiggins did great. He actually pushed Luka on the defensive end early in the first half. He had 15 points. He also did a great job defensively on Luka. So Andrew Wiggins, I think that was – in my opinion, that was one of the factors that we did not quantify as someone who would be able to successfully defend Luka. I don't think he's going to do that every game, but in the first game, it was a huge advantage for the Warriors. The Mavs, too, they're not going to be that bad from three-point range. 11 of 48 from three-point range. Right? They're not going to be that bad from three-point range, and they live or die by the three. The Dallas 213 made three-pointers in the playoffs, and their 572 attempted threes in the playoffs first. They lead the playoffs in both categories. So they live and die by it, and they won't be that bad, I promise you. Okay, let's get back to the biggest story of the day, which is Jimbo Fisher's beef with Nick Saban. For those who don't know, Nick Saban did call out the Aggies. He didn't call out Jimbo Fisher by name. So he didn't name names. He just named programs specifically and called them out about buying players. Called out the Aggies about buying players and actually used that term too, buying players. Jimbo Fisher took offense to it, like most coaches would, scheduled a press conference, and in the press conference, he went scorched to earth. We've played the sound for you. You can go on the internet and find it. It's viral. It's all over the place. And Jimbo Fisher called out Nick Saban in a way, call him a narcissist and saying he has a hinting he has a God complex. He called him out in such a way. I said, I don't think you can take some of that stuff back. Now, Nick Saban has since apologized. Nick Saban has since gone on SiriusXM and has apologized. He said, quote, I should have never singled anybody out, and I apologize for that part of it. Now, he's being specific. He's using specific terminology, saying I apologize for that part of it. He said, it's the whole system, and is this a sustainable system, and is it good for college football? So it's like when you apologize to your woman, and it's like, yo, baby, I'm sorry for hurting your feelings. I didn't apologize for what I said. I didn't apologize for what I did. I'm sorry it hurt you. That's essentially what Nick Saban said. I'm sorry it hurt you. Nick Saban also revealed that he has put in calls to Jimbo Fisher and to Deion Sanders, and they have not taken the call. He says he never got a response, and he says he does feel bad about it. He knows Deion because they did the Aflac commercials together, and of course, Jimbo Fisher was once on his coaching staff, so he knows Jimbo Fisher really well. Jimbo Fisher being the first former assistant to end up beating Nick Saban, and not only beat him during the season, but beat him in the offseason too, and got the number one recruiting class, and that hurt a little bit for Nick Saban. I think he took that personal. So I think now you got to go back and forth, Jimbo Fisher said his piece, and he went scorched earth. To me, I compared it to a diss track. To me, it was his version of Hit 'Em Up. And in Hit 'Em Up, Tupac crossed the Rubicon, said some things you can't take back. Can't take it back. You said, hey, man, I effed you fat mup. You can't take that back. All right? Talking about banging somebody's wife in a diss track, can't take it back. And I think that was because Tupac felt violated. He felt like Biggie violated the trust, that Biggie knew who tried to kill him, or that Biggie had something to do with it. Different level of disdain and beef. But still, I think that Jimbo, in Jimbo's mind, I think Saban violated a trust. And that trust was, in my opinion, that we did dirt together back in the day. I know when you did dirt. I know where the bodies are buried. And now you're calling me out about doing dirt at another university when me and you did dirt together? And I think that's why he's like, man, I can't believe this is happening. And one of the things for Jimbo Fisher, and I don't know if this is done intentionally, I said it, with him going scorched earth, he has picked a fight with Alabama. And some people say, oh, that's not very smart, picking a fight with Alabama, the greatest dynasty in history of college football. But think about what we've talked about with the Aggies and how they're searching for an identity. And part of that is, and it's a blue blood identity, and I granted they're not there yet, but having a rival is a big part of that. And they don't have a rival, right? And I think they don't want to be Texas' side piece rivalry. Texas has Oklahoma as their rival, and they're going to the SEC with it. They don't want to be the secondary rival for Texas. They want their own identity. They want to get from underneath the shadow of Texas, and they want their own rival, whether that should be LSU. LSU doesn't think so, or Arkansas. But if you can't find a rival, just pick a fight. Right? And the Aggies don't have a rival, but they've created this beef. And the beef in the here and now, in this moment, actually has made them, or that matchup at Alabama, one of the most anticipated, if not the most anticipated matchup of the college football season. Can you think of a college football matchup that you want to see? I'm talking about nationally. That nationally now is more intriguing. With Nick Saban calling out Jimbo Fisher and his program, and Jimbo Fisher going back at him. So, in a sense, it's a good thing for the Aggies, because now they might end up getting their butts kicked, but they did beat the Crimson Tide last year. They might get their butt kicks, but now everybody's talking about the Aggies, and everybody's talking about, not a rivalry, it's not a rivalry, everybody's talking about that beef. And right now, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with, you can't be with Mr. Right, how about Mr. Right Now? And for the Aggies, Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide are Mr. Right Now. And I guarantee, even Crimson Tide fans and Alabama fans, that game against the Aggies, they got it circled, and they're probably anticipating as much as that, you know, as the Iron Bowl. Right now, just right now, just because things are at a fever pitch. And I know a lot of Longhorn fans are saying, man, Jimbo Fisher's an idiot. That guy sounded like an idiot. He is an idiot. I don't even know if he knew what he was talking about up there. All those things may be true. But remember, he's not talking to you. He's talking to his base. There's people just about President Trump all the time. You're like, oh, man, I don't know why people are listening to him. I don't know. He sounds like an idiot. He ain't talking to you. If you think that, he's not talking to you. He's talking to his base, his people. And his people love it. Jimbo Fisher's people, they eat this up. And they're eating it up. Donations, telephone ringing off the hook. They love it that now the Aggies are the big topic of conversation. They've been trying to be the big topic of conversation in college football for decades. Mission accomplished. Longhorn fans just sitting back watching it all. They got a tie to Alabama, got to play them this year. And, of course, they got to play the Aggies at 1.2. I want to thank my man Patrick Davis for doing a great job as always. Thank Hardball Hards for always killing it. And you guys for listening. We really appreciate that as well. Remember, the revolution will not be televised, but we'll be talking about it right here on Ball Don't Lie. We love you guys. We mean that. Take care of yourselves, but more importantly, take care of each other. Craig Way and Hardball Hards on the call coming up next. Texas baseball. Don't go anywhere. Have a great weekend, folks. Peace.